You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, welcome in. Today on our podcast, Justin McLeod from D1Softball.com stops by. We'll talk to him about the Razorbacks as the softball season comes down the stretch. Will Bree Ellis win National Player of the Year? We'll get his thoughts on that. What does Arkansas have to do to secure a top eight national seed? Razorbacks number seven as they go in to this week's series against Colorado State. Ethan Westerman also going to be in studio with me. We'll talk to him about Razorback football, the scrimmage over the weekend, and much more. But first, a word from Kendall King.
Proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, we kick off the show today with Justin McLeod from D1 Softball. If you haven't been paying attention to Razorback softball, they've been having a really good run here of late. Last four weekends, they've beaten three teams who at the time were ranked in the top 10 of a poll. Some of them were consensus top 10, some of them very highly ranked, like Florida a couple of weeks ago, who was number two. South Carolina came in here to Bogle Park last weekend. Razorbacks won two of three. Justin, what has been the key to this last month for Razorback softball and the success that they've been having?
You know, I actually go back to something that Courtney Dyfel said after the Ole Miss series when Arkansas lost two of three against Ole Miss. And I remember her saying in a press conference, talked about executing the plan and the fact that, you know, for that weekend, maybe they didn't execute it as well. The execution this last month has been so impressive to me. The plan is there. Like, you know, it's the same thing. You pitch the ball, you hit the ball. Like, that's the thing. But the execution and how Arkansas has done that against really good teams has been the thing that's impressed me the most. The execution around, you know, okay, well, Bree Ellis is going to get walked. Okay, what happens behind her in the lineup? The pitching, the execution of the pitches in tough moments. Like, the execution has impressed me so much on so many different occasions on both sides of the ball.
You know, Ellis gets so many headlines, and rightfully so, and I want to talk to you more in depth about her in just a minute. Who are the other players, though, right now that are standing out to you that, you know, because like you said, she's not getting a lot of chances to hit the ball. Who are the others who are standing out and really making this team tick?
Well, I look at an Ella McDowell, who coming in as a freshman, I thought had a chance to be really something special right away, and I think you've seen that. I think she's giving Arkansas exactly what they knew they were getting when they recruited her and committed her, and she's doing it right away. Like, coming in as a freshman's not always the easiest thing to do, especially in the SEC, let's just be honest. But I think McDowell, to me, is probably the one, the top of my list, that's probably taking the most advantage of opportunities given her because, you know, Bree Ellis gets walked a lot. I look at McDowell, and she's not hitting like a freshman. She's not playing like a freshman. She's playing like a veteran. She's kind of always been that way. She's pretty cool, calm, collected, under pressure, no matter the situation, even in travel ball. But the fact that she's been able to translate that to college ball so effortlessly or so seemingly effortlessly has really stood out to me. And then I look at like a Reagan Johnson, for instance, who is kind of just steady Eddie. Maybe doesn't get the headlines that a Bree Ellis does or even a McDowell or even a Courtney Day at certain points this season. But Johnson's just kind of that steady Eddie. She's just kind of there. She's just kind of doing what she does consistently. Maybe it's not, you know, obviously she's not going to have a three home run game, but maybe it's not a four or five stolen base game. Maybe there's not a highlight reel catch every day. But you know she's good defensively. You know what you're going to get from her top of the lineup. You know what you're going to get from her from the spark plug perspective. And so she stood out to me less due to Ellis and getting walked and the opportunities that rise from that, and more just when I think of an offensive catalyst in the midst of, okay, well, Bree Ellis is being taken out of the equation because she's just being put on base. McDowell and Johnson are two of the ones that come to me that I'm like, okay, without those two, that offense probably isn't clicking like it is.
Arkansas 31-9 overall, 10-8 in the SEC, but you think they started SEC play 1-5, lost three of those to Oklahoma, pretty competitive games here. They're in Conway tonight at UCA. I know you're going to be at this game tonight, Justin. What do you know about UCA?
Definitely not the team they were a couple of years ago when they were a top 20 RPI, for sure. But still a solid club. Last year, they really started slow coming off of that really special year 2 years ago. And then they figured it out in conference play. Kind of a similar description of what I said about Reagan Johnson just now. UCA's kind of got that steady Eddie feel to them. They're pretty consistent. They're well coached. They have good talent, but they're one of those teams with kind of that, just that workhorse, that grinding mentality, kind of goes throughout their lineup, kind of goes throughout their bullpen. I think too, the one thing about UCA is we saw it that weekend when they had that special season 2 years ago, but just kind of in general, they're not scared of any opponent. They're you know, an ASUN team, and you think, okay, well, you got an SEC team. Sometimes that's a mismatch. UCA is one of those teams, whether it's Arkansas or somebody else, no matter the opponent, they're going to be that steady Eddie. I mean, they pitch the ball decently well. They've had their struggles, but they've also had some really impressive moments in the circle. Got a couple of pitchers that I think are pretty solid. And offensively, they don't hit a ton of home runs. They've got some home run power. They've got a couple of players at the top of the lineup that I really think are worth something. So I think we're due for what could be an interesting matchup.
You've got Arkansas ranked number 7 in your poll this week. And, you know, assuming they don't stump their toe this weekend, they play Colorado State here in Fayetteville this weekend. The way the SEC schedule works out is that, you know, there's always kind of an off weekend from conference play, even in the midst of SEC play. So assuming they don't stump their toe this weekend, they finish the year with A&M, who's number 1 in your poll. That game will be in College Station. And then they will come back here to Bogle to play LSU, who's number 10 in your poll. What do they need to do down the stretch here to secure one of those top 8 seeds that would assure them home field advantage before Oklahoma City?
I mean, if you want to feel really good about it, you want to win both series if you're Arkansas. I mean, you win those two series, and you're feeling really good going into Selection Sunday, going into the SEC tournament even, because whatever happens in the tournament, you're feeling good going into Selection Sunday. That's the beauty of the SEC tournament in this day and age. I think 3-3 in those two series, so not overlooking Colorado State or Central Arkansas this week, but just specific to those two series, you go 3-3 in those two series, that means you've got 3 wins over, no matter what else happens, what will be 2 top 10 RPI teams. That means you win one of those series. You go 3-3, and I think you've pretty close to locked up a top 8 bid, if you're Arkansas. Like, I don't think it actually matters which series you win. Like, you go to College Station, and if you beat A&M in that series, that probably locks it up there. Mm-hmm. But I think even if you just win one game in the A&M series and you win the LSU series at home, 3-3 in those final 2 weeks, and you should be feeling pretty good going into Selection Sunday if you're Arkansas.
You know, Arkansas, they've had a good path in the postseason the last several years. Haven't been able to seal the deal here in Fayetteville a couple of times in Super Regionals. Came so close against Texas a few years back. Yep. Is this maybe their most equipped team to go to the World Series, or have they had others that you think were more equipped?
So, to be honest with you, so I was at that Super Regional you mentioned against Texas a couple of years ago, and I actually think that was the biggest collection of talent. That was the best, most talented team Arkansas's had. What stands out to me about this team this year is you've got Bree Ellis sitting there and all that, but you don't have just that stacked lineup of a Danielle Gibson, Hannah McEwen, you know, that top 4, top 5 that you had a couple of years ago or 4 years ago, whatever it was, where it's just like, okay, it's murderer's row. This Arkansas team, these are workers. These are players with a lot of talent, but who also go out there and put in the work. And okay, Ellis is getting walked. Well, somebody's coming up behind her. I really like that about this Arkansas team. I actually don't think it's the most talented team that they've had. It's incredibly talented. I'm not taking anything away from the talent this year. I don't think it's the best team they've had. I think it could be their best shot at going to the World Series, though, because I really like what I see. And I mentioned execution earlier. I really like what I see in how Arkansas is executing on both sides of the ball. They're not taking anything for granted. They're not being handed anything. They are out there. They're grinding. They're working. And the results are paying off. When I look at the pitching staff, I don't see, like, you think about a Mary Half, Shanice Dells type of 1-2. I don't think Arkansas has that. What you have instead is Robin Heron and Peyton Burnham and Cam Harrison, who can go out there and, you know what, get 16 strikeouts against Tennessee in Knoxville. Go out there and have quality starts against Florida. because they're working, that you see them working and you see the results paying off. I don't think this is the best team Arkansas has had, but I think it might be their best shot at going to the World Series.
There's a hunger, I know, from Courtney Dyfel to get her team there. And again, because they've come so close. She went there so many times as a player. I think back to whenever she took over the program. I mean, they were going 1-23 in the SEC on multiple occasions. And so to see where they were 10 years ago versus where they are now, and honestly, they've been at this level that they're at now for probably about 5 years or so, maybe even a little bit longer, it's remarkable, I think. And I think that maybe sometimes it gets a little bit overlooked, just how remarkable of a turnaround, and then to sustain that success. Because it's one thing to turn it around and maybe have that type of season once or twice, but we're talking about an Arkansas program that's, you know, really sustained being one of the top, you know, 15 or so programs in the country for 5 years now.
You're absolutely right. Like, I think it's something, sometimes you have to step back to your point, because, you know, the last couple of years, oh, well, Arkansas lost at home in a regional 2 years in a row. Oh, that's so terrible. Oh, these are down years. Well, you got to kind of step back in bird's eye view it. They were hosting a regional both years. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Yeah, they didn't make it to the Supers, but they were top 16. To your point, when Courtney Dyfel took over, the idea of making the NCAA tournament was not a given. It wasn't close to a given when she took over. So bird's eye viewing it, you're absolutely right. Like, the last, it's got to be close to a decade now, maybe it is a decade since Dyfel took over. Like, the turnaround is remarkable, but to your secondary point, sustaining that turnaround is the hard part. Like, it's one thing to come in and win 30 or 40 games in your first year or two as a head coach, and oh, you go from 1-23 to 5 and whatever the math works out to be. Oh, that's wonderful. Or 8 and whatever the math works out to be. Oh, that's great. It is a turnaround. But to sustain that for a decade, to build it up the way it has, and you think about the postseason, you think about hosting regionals, hosting supers. Now we're talking about, okay, is this their best chance to go to the World Series? We're talking about Arkansas. Okay, you know what? They're in that group. Okay, can they go to the World Series? When Dyfel took over, it was, can they challenge to go to the NCAA tournament? At that point, it was, can they challenge to go to the SEC tournament? And I mean, I think you do have to bird's eye view that, because that's really hard to do, and it's really hard to sustain. And here they've done it and sustained it.
Okay, I want to talk to you about Bree Ellis, because the feeling is that she is going to be the National Player of the Year. 484 average. You look at her OPS, I think it's 1828 going into this series, which is incredible. 40 games into the season, 20 home runs, just 10 strikeouts. I think you could probably make 10, 15 data points that make people say, wow, that's incredible. Is she going to win the National Player of the Year? Like, I mean, are there others that can come up and maybe take this thing away from her?
Always the possibility that she doesn't. Do I think it's super likely that she doesn't? I don't. I think the biggest thing for me is, a lot of years when we look at National Player of the Year, one of the things that comes into consideration, whether it should or not, like, that's a debate for a different time, but whether it should or not, is how successful the team is. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this player is insanely good, but the team's not so great, et cetera, et cetera. The one thing that gets me about Ellis this year, Arkansas's having incredible success in their winning, so it's kind of a non-factor. But even when Arkansas, you know, those first couple of weeks of SEC play, even when the UCLA lost out at the Mary Nutter, Bree Ellis was still top of the list, top of the list, top of the list, because of how well she's playing, because of how consistent she is. That consistency has not fallen off in conference play. I mean, her walk numbers have gone up, and so maybe her home runs, she hasn't hit as many home runs, but all that's doing is sending her OBP up. Like, that's the thing that gets me. Like, if her biggest sin is she's getting walked and her OBP is rising when her home run totals aren't, oh, the horror. And I think people look at that and realize that's what happens to somebody who should be the National Player of the Year. Do I think it's possible she doesn't win it? Yeah, it's always possible. I don't think it's likely at this point. Like, those are video game numbers she's putting up. And like I say, if what hurts her the most is she's getting walked so much that she can't really hit home runs, like, you really can't penalize her for that.
So who are the other players that would be considered for this other than her?
I mean, I'll look at a Megan Grant from UCLA as a possibility. She's leading the nation in home runs and RBIs right now. She's had a couple of insane weeks. Again, being a national championship contender like UCLA as well, that's going to buoy the candidacy of somebody like that. You always look at a Nigeria Kennedy, maybe even a Jordy Ball from Texas Tech and Nebraska. Two-way players. Kennedy was the USA Softball National Player of the Year last year at Stanford. Voters and critics and pundits and whoever else are always going to like the two-way player where you can make an impact on both sides of the ball, and both of those players have. So I think you always have to consider them, put them in consideration, for instance. Those are a few names I'd look at as possible contenders. And again, should it factor in what their team does? Probably not. Does it? Maybe. But you're talking about a UCLA team that's a top 16 team, a Texas Tech team with Kennedy that's, you know, close to being a top 16, Nebraska that's doing well in the Big Ten. So those are a few of the names that I'd look at under Ellis.
Less than a month away from the NCAA selection show. The season's flying by. Justin, hopefully we can talk to you again before the regionals get underway.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. It's always fun.
All right. Appreciate it. Justin McLeod from D1Softball.com. When we come back, Ethan Westrum is going to join me here in the studio. But first, word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their communities since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Also want to tell you, you can get the latest news on the Razorbacks at wholehogsports.com. It's the most in-depth source for all Razorback news, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. And speaking of subscribing, hope you'll subscribe to our podcast. You can find it on Apple by searching Whole Hog Sports. We're also got a YouTube video page. We put the video version there each day, and we post that video to our social media pages on Facebook and Twitter. Arkansas baseball in action tonight against UAPB over at Baum Walker Stadium. It's going to be a 6 o'clock first pitch between the Razorbacks and the Golden Lions. Tate McGuire going to be on the mound for the Razorbacks. They're trying to get back on track after that loss to Georgia. 4 games in 5 days at Baum for the baseball team. They'll have Wednesday off. And then we start this Thursday, Friday, Saturday deal where their last 3 home games all begin on a Thursday, or their last 3 home series. They've got Texas A&M this weekend. The Aggies are suddenly hot. They've won 5 in a row in conference play. They come in for a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Arkansas will go to Florida next week, and then the week after that, Texas, who's number 1 in the polls this week, they'll come in for a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Arkansas will then go to LSU, and then the season ends with Tennessee on another Thursday, Friday, Saturday. That is quite the stretch. To have A&M, the preseason number 1, Texas, the current number 1, and Tennessee's last year's national champion, Ethan, 3 weeks in a row, or not 3 weeks in a row, but 3 series in a row to end the regular season here in Fayetteville.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but that's what you know, you sign up for when you play in the SEC, is it feels like across the board, I feel like, what sport have we not said that this year about, what a schedule ahead. It's just brutal all across the board how good the conference is. And, you know, of course, it's a funny deal. Like, of course, Texas A&M's coming in right as they're, you know, kind of starting to get hot, it seems. You know, a team that, you know, you don't even have to pay a lot of attention to college baseball to know that they struggled a lot early in the year, but it seems like they're picking up some momentum right now. So, you know, it's a nice schedule, especially for the fans. Oh, my goodness, what a home slate to close it out with.
Softball in action tonight down in Conway. Arkansas playing UCA for the second time this year. The Razorbacks beat them 6-3 here at Bogle Park last month. This game's going to be a 5 o'clock first pitch on ESPN+.
Yep, it's going to be they're for some reason always a thorn in the side of Arkansas. Like, they don't, even if they beat UCA, they don't play well. So they actually played them earlier this year in Fayetteville. It was like a weird elementary day, which is a new one, at like 10:30 a.m. or something. And Arkansas won 6-3, which, to be honest, that's a team they should probably beat a lot worse than that. So weird things happen when they play UCA. I'll be curious to see if they can just handle business tonight. It's a weird field down there. They play on turf. The fences are like hard to hit home runs over there. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But they're playing really well right now.
All right, so I want to talk to you. You were at the football scrimmage over the weekend. I'm just going to open up the floor for you to talk about whatever stood out to you.
Yeah, I mean, there was good and bad, I feel like, across the board, pretty much. I think my biggest feeling after the scrimmage was the defense played well. That was, like, the number one thing that stood out was, I'm talking about primarily the first team defense. I mean, Xavier Sory was everywhere, which I think people kind of expect him to have a huge year this year, you know, being that returner after transferring from Georgia before last year, leading Arkansas in tackles. He's had a year here and he was everywhere. I mean, he had an interception, he had sacks, he had tackles. he was everywhere. So the defense stood out. Quincy Rhodes, he's kind of one that I think that you're going to continue to hear more and more of. He's the defensive end from North Little Rock, I believe. He's, I think he's primed to have a pretty big year. Like, just as far as he was just behind Landon Jackson for so long. Like, I mean, that's somebody had to be, you know. And I think that now it's kind of his time. He was everywhere on Saturday. The whole linebacker crew they have right now, they've been doing this three-man front where they have three linebackers, and they have Sory Dix and Steven Dix and Bradley Shaw, who's entering his sophomore year. And Shaw's playing kind of that buck linebacker position where it's kind of like hybrid, kind of like a DN where he's rushing. And he is – those three together just – I don't know. They're really athletic, really good, and I think that the linebackers stand out when you watch the team play. So from the scrimmage Saturday, I think the linebackers stood out. The defense in general played well. Taylen Green didn't have his best day, but it wasn't bad, if that makes sense. Like, he was actually pretty accurate with the ball. He just didn't make any, you know, like – big, that he didn't have a touchdown, so there was no just like huge highlight plays, but he had some nice completions, used his legs. It's always in a scrimmage like that, you can't really see the full extent of like how much the legs make a difference because they aren't hitting the quarterback. Spread the wealth with receivers, which I think that's a question going into the year because he doesn't have Andrew Armstrong anymore, who's just like, you know, sometimes laser vision for that guy. But that spread it around some. The biggest issue, I think, the field goal kicking just was not good on Saturday. And I get it. It's, you can't put too much stock into one day in the stadium. But also, it was like our first scrimmage to get to watch in the stadium. And whenever kickers go a combined, I forget what they were combined. But
I've got the numbers here. Scott Starzik was 2 for 6.
Yeah.
You said he did not hit a try from longer than 36 yards, missed from 52, 47. 46 and 46, made 36 and 23 yard attempts. You said Blake Ford from North Texas was 3 for 4 with a long of 54. And this redshirt freshman kicker, Charlie Vandermaiden, missed his only attempt.
Yeah, it just – and the thing is, Starzik is the guy I think you're going into this. Like, he's – you almost feel the same way that people did about like the
number,
Cam Little.
Number one or number two kicker coming out of high school last year.
Exactly. So you get it. He's like, I mean, he's an early enrollee who he could be in high school right now. Maybe it's just jitters on a Saturday first scrimmage and stuff. But it is – you know, whenever you watch who you think is going to be the guy miss like that, it is a concern. But Scott Fountain, the special teams coordinator, did point out that Cam Little struggled in his first scrimmage. And I think Scott Fountain tried to make it a little just like don't overreact type of deal. Like, this is one scrimmage. But, I mean, there's no way you watch that and you aren't wondering a little bit of what's going to – if it's going to shake out there. Because, I mean, he's obviously an uber-talented guy. You don't become the number one prospect at your position without being talented. So, you know, and there's always the adjustment of kicking in the stadium for the first time. So, you know, we'll see if that improves. But it was – that was over – the overarching, in my opinion, from the whole scrimmage, like the number one, like, all right, this is something to now monitor.
I've always wanted to go back and explore the data about whether or not Razorback Stadium is one of the toughest places to kick in the SEC. Because, you know, like in the NFL, the Steelers stadium is the toughest stadium to kick in, or at least at one time it was. I don't know if it still is with some of these new stadiums that have been built. But I have to believe that because most of the new stadiums that are being built are indoors, that the Steelers probably is still the toughest stadium. It seems like we see Arkansas's kickers really struggle. I don't even know if I'd say more often than not, but we see a number of times in the spring or preseason scrimmages where the field goal numbers just are not very good there in Fayetteville.
Yeah, it's deja vu from last spring right now. As far as, like, that's just what it reminded me of, was they were not kicking well at all in the spring last year. And, you know, Scott found there's, I mean, these guys kick, speaking special teams, kicker terms that are above me, but they talk about the wind tunnels in there, and I don't understand the tunnels, but apparently they're very difficult to navigate.
I get it. So, you know, what's interesting is that when I used to cover football a lot more on a daily basis, 10, 15 years ago, everything that we would do was in the stadium. Mm-hmm. And so we would hang out down in the southwest corner of the stadium quite often, waiting to do interviews. And, I mean, it felt like your hair was going to blow off. The wind there is just insane. It doesn't matter if it's blowing just 15, 20 miles an hour outside. Yeah. I mean, it's just so I certainly understand what he's talking about with those wind tunnels in the stadium. And that's where I go back to, you know, like you watch the games, if you're sitting there in the stadium, and you'll look up at the top of the stadium, and the flags will be blowing one way. And then you look down on the goalpost, and they'll be blowing another way. It swirls in that stadium. And I want to go back and maybe dig into this a little bit more, but I think that is probably a very difficult stadium to kick in.
This should be your July project after baseball ends. And
I mean, when I take my nap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, and the thing is, Starzik is, we've seen him kick indoors some, and I mean, I've seen this guy drill, like, I think it was, if it wasn't 60 yards, it was dang near close. He just drilled it a couple weeks ago. Like, he's clearly talented. You just might have had a bad day in the stadium, but it was a concern because it's a scrimmage. It's, you know, the biggest lights yet, and it's in front of eyes. And I'll be curious to see, you know, this coming Saturday, red-white game, how they fare.
1 o'clock, the red-white game at Razorback Stadium. No broadcast of it this year. All the SEC teams have, I think it's all the SEC teams, right? Or no, I think A&M's going to have theirs on television, but everybody else said, not doing that.
Yep.
And we don't know why, but I think we all suspect it's because they don't want teams watching and trying to poach the players the next day or 2 days later.
Yeah, we're in the Wild West. I mean, if anything this past week with the whole Nico Iamaliava news, tells you, I mean, it's just different times. It is very much different times. And I good for us that they're not broadcasting it. I guess head over to our website and read everything that we write.
It is weird because the expectation over the last 15 years, whether it be on like a little regional cable network or certainly on SEC, you know, network since that launched, there's an expectation that that's going to be, you know, televised or available to watch on your TV, and it's certainly not going to be the case this year. I think it's going to I would suspect that Saturday there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be looking for this and unaware that you're not going to be able to watch it unless you're in the stadium.
Yeah, nothing worse than thinking you're going to get to watch something and then checking your TV and realizing, hey, you're in luck.
So this Nico Iamaliava thing,
yep.
Let's talk about this for a second, because I've said this a number of times. It just doesn't feel like anybody has control of what's going on in college football right now. And we've talked about it a number of times. The system is totally broken. It's totally broken when, you know, there's reports that Iamaliava and some of his teammates, even as early as December, before they played in their playoff game against Ohio State, were threatening to, you know, hold out of the playoff game if they didn't get more money. And it's just like, remember the Mike Gundy quote last year before the season started, where he said something like, "Players, tell your agents negotiating season is over. Like, don't call me during the season. We'll start back up in January," or something, you know, along those lines. I just have to believe that what the coaches are dealing with in college football is maddening on a day-to-day basis. It's just, you know, player has a great bowl game, Dazmon James, next day or 2 days later, or however, he's in the portal. You know, player has a great spring game, next day, a couple days later, he hits the portal or he's in the collective office, you know, saying, I need X number of dollars more. It's just insane that all these people on college campuses, no less, are supposed to be the smartest people in the world, that they can't get together and fix this to where they say, look, you've got a contract, we've got a contract, we're going to stick to this. And if you want to break it, break it. But, you know, I mean, it's like, let's get away from all this nonsense that's happening right now. It just seems like there's ways to fix this that nobody really, there's really no one central person who wants to take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and lead college football in a good direction, because I don't think it's going in a good direction right now, off the field at least.
Yeah, and it feels like there's just layers, like, to it every single time. Like, I mean, you even think about what we were dealing with around bowl season this past year, where the portal's open, teams are trying to get ready to play. It's like they have a problem with the money right now. They have a problem with their portal calendar. There's a problem. There's just all these other problems that just keep layering on top of each other, and all it makes for is a big, massive headache. And yeah, I'm glad that I don't have to deal with, you know, I can't imagine day to day how maddening that must be. You're just trying to win a game, and you're having to deal with these agents. But no.
I don't know if it's just agents.
I mean, it's the players too.
I don't know if it's the players so much as it is the players being steered a certain way by parents, by handlers, by agents, whatever the case might be. It's a broken system, though. And a lot of people say, oh, well, Nico Iamaleava is the first one to hold out. He's not. Remember the UNLV quarterback last year?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're a top 25 team. They're undefeated. Talking about being a, you know, playoff candidate. And he quit on the team. Yeah. Middle of the season, because he didn't get what apparently had been promised to him.
And I'm telling you, if I was a coach these days, that's why, like, recruiting players, I would, like, you got to look at, I feel like you got to do your homework big time right now of just what do you think their character is and how they're going to, if you think this is somebody who would do that type of stuff. I get it, you can't, it's a very large roster size, you can't control that, you're going to have some things pop up, some people want to do stuff like that, but, like, I just feel like you got to really vet who you're bringing in your program now.
I think it was a Bobby Warnes interview I was listening to a week or so back. I think it was with Bo Mattingly. And he brought up a story about whenever he was coaching, or maybe he was playing in pro ball, one or the other, because he was in pro ball either as a player or a coach for a few years. And he said that he came across somebody who heard that he was from Arkansas. And he wanted to pull him aside. He's like, hey, you said you're from Arkansas, right? Yeah, yeah, I played at Arkansas. He's like, what is different about that program? He said, because the players that we see come through the minor leagues from that program, they stand out as being different from the players, you know, from a lot of other programs. And like the ones who come in, you know, they really advance quickly in a lot of cases. And, you know, Bobby said he thinks that it just comes down to, it's the type of person, the type of character that Van Horn recruits at Arkansas baseball. That's not to say you can't get a bad apple in there, you can't misread somebody, but, you know, I've heard him talk about this too, about whenever they bring players in and they're recruiting him, he's kind of analyzing the person, reading the room, reading the parents, reading the player, all of these different things, you know. And it's, I think that, you know, when you finally get down to the end point, you're not just offering a scholarship. And I guess where I'm going with this is that I think football programs would be very wise to try to do this. I know it's difficult for them because it's all about win, 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 and nobody cares, you know, if you got off the field problems or not, so long as you're winning X number of games every year. But I think that, you know, what stands out to me about the baseball program here is that when it gets to the end point and you're offering that scholarship, you're not just offering the scholarship based on athletic ability. You are offering the scholarship based on ability, character, a lot of other things that maybe aren't evaluated and prioritized in other programs.
Yeah. And the hard thing about it these days is I think you can bring in, you know, a good apple who gets people in his ear, his or her ear, you know, and while they're playing about, I don't know. It's just like these people that are all feeding into these athletes now and giving them advice on what they need to do. It's like they have so many voices. It's like, who do they listen to? And I just think that, I mean, like, it's, I don't want to, like, you know, come at Nico Imaliava's character or whatever, because I don't know. He just, like, from interviews and stuff seems like a fine guy, but it's like, you just assume that you might, even if you have a good apple that gets brought in, like, you have so many people feeding him their voices, and it's just a big culture of more, more, more with everything, I feel like, right now, that it's like, I don't know, it's, you gotta really vet who you're bringing in, A, and then I feel like you really have to create a, like, a, I don't know, like, some sort of just force field around your program. I don't know how you do that, but I feel like that's almost like you get them in, and then how do you protect them from these outside voices?
The unfortunate thing is, for a lot of these athletes, there's a lot of moochers around them, whether it be parents who, you know, in certain situations, I get it. Everybody comes from different financial backgrounds. I understand this. But the agent aspect to this too, Richard wrote something on our website a few days ago where he talked to Paul Biancardi of ESPN, their national recruiting director for basketball. And basically, they talked about agents and how we're so new in this process, and there are so many more players in college that, you know, the agents are there's a lot of bad agents out there, basically. Oh, yeah. There are a lot of people out there who don't really know what they're doing. And again, you know, you get the agent around you. If you've got a good agent, you know, they know what they're doing. You get a bad agent, somebody who's like, hey, I can make a buck by getting you 50 grand more a year, you know, 'cause I'm going to get my whatever percent cut of that. You know, I think that there's just so many bad actors in this process. And I don't know how, I don't pretend to be intelligent enough to solve this, but there's got to be somebody out there, a Greg Sankey or the like, who steps up and says, hey, we are going to save college football from itself and fix this. Like we cannot continue to go down this path that we're going down right now.
Yeah, there's got to be a lot more rules, I feel like. But the hard part about that is then you have all these lawsuits that come up. It's just, yeah, I'd hate to be in charge right now. Thank goodness we just sit here and talk about it.
It's pretty fascinating. So, yeah, there's the Nico Iamaliava, our two cents on that. Softball, we talked to Justin McLeod earlier. You cover Razorback softball. What are your thoughts on this team?
Yeah, I mean, they're playing really well right now. They figured out something when they went to Tennessee and won. I think that it was – I wrote this in a notebook yesterday. Their whole season eerily feels similar to what happened with men's basketball, where they got off to a bad SEC start, literally the same record, 1-5, and then they went into a game, a series at Tennessee that has probably the pitcher of – one of the candidates for National Pitcher of the Year, if not the front runner. She's definitely top two or three, and they beat her in game one. And then they ended up winning the series – and it just felt like the team learned something about itself that series. And since then, has been on a roll. I mean, they've only lost 3 games. They've won every series they've played. You know, for them, it's a matter of maintaining this level of play. The past few years, they've struggled at the end of the year. It started with their last series of the season both times, and then it carried into SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament. So they've got to find a way to just maintain what they have going on right now, because right now how they're playing, they really can beat anybody right now with how they're playing. I mean, if they played OU again, I'd think they'd have a shot. If they played Texas, they'll have A&M here soon, who's the number one team. I think they have a shot against anybody they play right now. It's just a matter of continuing to play how they have been. They've been really good at winning different ways, which I think that's important in any sport, but especially, you know, softball, baseball. It's just like, can you win when X thing isn't going how it normally does? And they've been doing that.
A couple of notes before we get out of here. Mason Jones, a former Razorback, named the MVP of the NBA G League Finals last night. He scored 19 points and had 13 had 13 points and 13 assists in their finals game last night.
And he got hurt toward the end, and it looked like they might lose because of it, and then the team stepped up and won. He had a great year. And I mean, if people just follow his what he did in the G League all season, I don't know if they've already named like their just G League player of the year. I know that he's the finals one, but I think he'd be in the conversation for the G League player of the year just because of the year he had. He's playing in the Kings, the Stockton Kings, which is not far from, you know,
Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. So it was actually cool. I think he got called up for a little bit not long ago. It was like 2 days before Arkansas played in San Francisco, which, you know, Sacramento and San Fran are pretty close. He got called up and got to be with the Kings on the night that they played the Thunder in Sacramento. So Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones had a game together. So I saw photos of that. But he's had a, I think, you know, he seems like one, if you just follow his pro career, it's like, when is he going to get a real shot at the league?
He averaged 23 points and 10 assists in the three finals games. So congratulations to Mason Jones on that. And then Arkansas baseball, we kind of hinted at this yesterday that we thought they probably would not fall very far in the polls and that there might be a little bit of differential in the polls. Well, they're out. They're number two in the coaches poll, which is the poll that we use. They're number two in the D1 baseball poll, which is probably the poll that I respect the most behind the coaches poll. They're number four in the other three polls. Mentioned they're going to play UAPB tonight. Just a couple of quick numbers, Ethan, on how poorly UAPB has played. Maybe this is the one that stands out the most. They've got a run differential of minus 2.97 against the number 286 schedule in the country.
Not good. Not good. Not good.
No. So, I mean, this is a team that they're playing a lot of bad teams, and they're getting beaten quite frequently. Arkansas again against UAPB tonight, 6 o'clock over at Baum Walker Stadium. You can read about that game once it's over on our website at wholehogsports.com. We'll have another podcast tomorrow. Christina Long going to sit in for me on that podcast tomorrow. Hope you'll join her. Hope we see you at our website. Have a great day, everybody.